We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores, the games every day.
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined by Mike, no Darius today. And yesterday, the Miami Heat took a 1-0 lead over Boston with a 118-107 win, which were more points than I expected, certainly. And we got a bit of a plot twist right before the game. Coming in, both teams were relatively healthy, with the exception of Kyle Lowry. You had a few guys on Miami's injury report, and some guys who had been banged up for Boston as well in the Milwaukee series. But we thought going into the game, it was just going to be Lowry out amongst the main players. And then both Al Horford, due to health and safety protocols, and then Marcus Smart, due to an ankle issue that happened during that Milwaukee series, were both out. So two starters go out. Mike, I think a decent portion of this pod is going to be parsing out what is real from the first game and what translates when those guys come back. But Boston's lack of depth is something that you had pointed out earlier in these playoffs. What kind of impact does losing those two guys, you think, have on a team like Boston?
Well, this is one of the things that sucks about the NBA when you have an injury, is that since there's just five players on the court, losing someone even of pretty high role player significance can make the whole difference in a series. And if you think about it from a Lakers standpoint, there are countless examples. We have to go through all of them. The first one that popped in my mind was, you know, Bynum and Ariza in the 2008 finals against Boston. And just that series being a little closer than everybody remembers. And, you know, if you had some of that toughness and size on the wing and Ariza, and if you had a little bit more beef and skill in the paint. So, and then other teams, of course, can make all these same claims. But because of what we know, as that headline came through, and it was like, oh, Smart and Horford are both out for game one, I immediately am like, oh, okay, Miami wins this one. You know, it's, to me, it was that simple. And I thought that Boston actually was impressive early.
Oh, yeah.
The first quarter, it was, let's see, 28-25 Celtics. And then they end up outscoring them by five in the second quarter. And so they go into the locker room up eight and had led by as many as 13 at different points. And I think that another truth that we know that happens, Pete, in the NBA playoffs is that a team can't help the human nature element of, okay, Boston isn't their full selves today. So this is some kind of an advantage. And I thought Miami relaxed is too strong of a word, sure, but they weren't their typical selves. And I texted a couple of my Heat buddies at halftime and said, okay, Spo's going to get into them, right? Butler's going to, whatever. But they're going to come out and they're going to be different in the third quarter. And I assume that you saw that.
I did. That was certainly a factor. But I think that there's another element where game ones have a certain feel out process, especially when you get to this point in the playoffs where you just played another team and got used to playing them. And so Boston plays with more force and a different type of force than Philadelphia does, right? Obviously, they've got Embiid and they've got big guys on the wing. And
Boston tries hard.
Yeah. No. Yes. And
it's true.
And
like Philly doesn't play that hard, you know?
Well,
yeah.
some guys on Philly don't play that hard. Right? You got Danny Green and Tybalt and like even a guy like Harris is going to play hard. Embiid played until he got gassed, right?
Most of the time, but even a significant, like when one guy like Harden plays a certain way, it just can't help but impact the rest of the team. And you can lose focus basically against Philly for periods of time and be totally fine. And I don't think you can do the same against Boston.
It does. Yes. That said, though, I think there's an element outside of the focus component where Boston is faster. They're faster and more athletic than Philly is. Philly's a slower team than they are. And one of the things that I noticed in that first half where Boston was scoring very easily, they had 62 points at halftime, was they were beating Miami defenders like on their first dribble, right? Like or on their first step. And I noticed a couple of defenders. There's a play on the left wing where Tatum had the ball and Vincent was on him. And Vincent was like surprised that Tatum caught it and went. And that's something that's what Boston does, is they're very aggressive at attacking the basket, especially off of the dribbling. They've got their two best guys they have a ton of size and athleticism relative to their ball handling ability. And so that was something that, along with Robert Williams, I thought played wonderfully, especially in that first half. But there was a certain amount of, even a guy like Williams is so different as a center than Embiid. He's a lob threat. He's going to roll hard. Embiid's more of an on-ball scorer at this point of his career, who will pick and roll some, but that's not really the main thing he does. And so I thought there was a certain level of like, oh, crap, that we're not in Kansas anymore type of thing, that I thought Miami defensively made some adjustments at halftime. And we'll get into that in a bit. But I do think that there's a certain feeling out like you're playing a new team now and you're playing new players who have new tendencies and new like ways of looking to attack.
And I just realized I didn't really answer part of your first question, which was about Boston's depth. And my concern there. And so Daniel Theis, you know, pretty good player overall for a backup big, but not to the level, certainly of Al Horford. And so Horford misses this game. Theis is a minus 16. And that's while going 4 for 5 from the field, you know, 4 rebounds. Like his counting stats are fine. That's actually like, oh, okay, that's kind of productive. You got a couple of dunks, a couple of assists, no turnovers. But they're just not the same team. And then Aaron Nesmith plays 11 minutes. He basically hadn't played yet in the playoffs. He did have 3 blocks somehow, but
he was really good on defense, Mike. Yeah. Like I was like, holy crap, this guy was. So that's one of the things too. Like my little bit of pushback is several of the replacements or a couple of the guys that got minutes or more minutes than they would have were actually pretty good.
But here's the thing. So Pritchard is another one, right? So Pritchard hits 4 threes and ends up scoring 18 points. But Boston, the whole reason why I think they're so devastating defensively is that they truly switch everything 1 through 5 with Marcus Smart in the game. And all of a sudden, you can't do that. If it's Peyton Pritchard or even if it's Nesmith or Theis to the same degree, it's just the unit, White even.
Yeah.
Yeah. And White at least replaces some of it. Like if he's your guy coming off the bench, he's a terrific defender, right?
Yeah. If he's your like worst physical defender on your rotation, like you're pretty good.
And so that to me, just that's the difference, right? That's the difference. So they, instead of that, Pritchard, while he was effective and he ends up only being a minus one because he is hitting threes and he's, you know, making some good plays, but they were targeting him and they were able to go at him and they're able to score on him. And Jimmy Butler, by the way, is able to do that. And Jimmy was just predatory in this game. And that was my caveat. As we talked about Miami, you talked about how much you love them. And I said, if Jimmy gets back to what we've seen before in the postseason, which he was not playing like in the regular season, then they're different. You know, then that is a team that can get to the finals and can even win the finals. And I think now, Pete, with this, like, we'll see. So Horford, is he going to be back by game 4? I don't know. Is Marcus Smart, does he have a chance to play in game 2? If they don't, then Miami's winning the series. If they do come back, then I still give Boston a shot. And I think that Tatum is that good. I think that when they can employ their full defense, all of that is good. But maybe what they need, Pete, is a little bit of electric lemonade. That might
I was wondering if that would come up.
That might be the thing that could spark them.
Indeed, spark them indeed. So yesterday was our first day back at the office as an organization, like in full. And we had this big old meeting. It was, you know, throughout the day, and it was great. And as
got
part
to hang
of
out with Pete.
Yep. Yep. And it was funny because like we're sitting there at the table talking hoops and we're talking about this series. And I'm like, God, I wish they had Lowry. Right. It's before the Celtics game. And Nick Kioski, who longtime Lakers behind the scenes on, the, you know, working on the site. And
legend.
Yes.
My initial boss brought me to the Lakers along with Ty Nowell. Yeah.
Yeah. So Nick is like, do y'all ever like save this for the pod? And I'm like, And we're like, see, we have this ongoing conversation throughout the day in which we give a window of like 30 minutes into it. But yeah.
Well, the initial framing from Nick was more like, wait, hold on. Do you guys talk like this all the time? Or is this or like, yeah, this is how we talk to each other. I mean, we also talk about other things like your families and things like that. But we basically just talk like this all the time.
Yeah, it's weaved in. It's always lurking, not too far away.
It's the same thing when I'm on the bus with Michael. Right. Like that's the same way that we used to talk on the radio show. That's just always how we talk. That's just sort of that's how it is. Yeah,
it's great. It's great. And so we're sitting at the table and there's five or six of us and one of the drinks that they had available for us was, it's called Charged, and it's this like strawberry lemonade, but it's caffeinated. And it's, and so I was like, yeah, I'll try that. I didn't have any coffee or anything. I could use a little boost. And so I'm the only person at the table that's got this little special strawberry lemonade. And I drink it. And every time I drink it, it's like, when you're wearing socks and you like scoot across the carpet and then you touch someone and zzz, gets that little, every time I drink it, there's this little like zap. And I'm like, I'm sitting here drinking this. And I'm like, is this actually happening? And so each drink, I'm like, this drink actually does this. And so everybody else is having this conversation about, you know, something else. And I'm like, you guys, like this freaking drink zaps you when you drink it. And Mike, like kind of bemusedly is like looking at me like, okay. Yeah, sure. And so I'm like, I get up and I get Mike a drink. And I get him some of this lemonade. And what happened, Mike, when you took that?
I'll tell you after the break.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Look, Pete, I know that people were just on the edge of their seats wondering what happened when I tried the lemonade. And I thought, we have to take advantage and get an add in here. I mean, I did get an initial shock. I did. And it was surprising. So I didn't think you were lying. I just didn't think it was going to affect me to that degree. It did wane subsequently to the first
shock. Yeah, we had different experiences with this. Yeah. But I've never had a drink that electrically. So yeah, our electric lemonade experience. Yeah. Yesterday.
Yeah. So we need
fun.
To look at those ingredients and, you know, back to basketball.
Yes. So some charge. Yeah. Second half rolls around. It's 62-54. I was watching footage of Miami versus Boston 2 years ago in the conference finals in the bubble. And every single game, both teams scored 100 plus points. And I was wondering how many times that was going to happen in this series. And so far we're 1-for-1 in large part because of that first half. That third quarter comes around and Miami shows on the defensive end why they're special. They turn Tatum over 6 times. In that quarter. And this is something, Mike, that when we think about, I agree with your points about being able to switch everything and there are fewer targetable guys. And that's what, when you have Smart and or Horford back, you lose that. Like, I don't think Miami scores 118 again, especially if those guys are back. But I do think that that third quarter and second half does speak to a legitimate weakness that Boston has. Whenever I watch them, and obviously I'm rooting against them, I'm like, get up into these dudes, like ball pressure them and make them dribble the ball under pressure with like ball denial.
Why didn't Javon Carter last series, you know, over Grayson Allen or somebody who could just pressure the ball and something like that. Like Spoelstra would have done that, you know?
Exactly. And this is, you have to make teams pay, quote unquote, for the decisions that they make, even lineup wise. Right. And so, one of the things that Boston decides to do is be like, hey, we're not really going to have a point guard. Last time these two teams played, Kemba was in the mix. They decided, they changed. This was the year where one of the years where Horford was gone. And so they basically exchanged Kemba for Horford, and it's mostly the same dudes. And that, you know, you decide we're going to get a lot bigger, but with an Al Horford, we still have a good degree of ball handling. And Tatum, Brown, and Smart have all gotten a lot better with their handles since they've gotten into the league and a lot better with their decision making. But Mike, it's still not what they naturally do. And so every other team, I think, has a more comfortable ball handler, dribbler as their like best guy. And but the thing is, like, what is Brooklyn going to do to Boston? Are they going to get up into them defensively? Of course not. Is Milwaukee going to do that? You can do that individually with Drew and Wes, but their scheme overall is to hang back into the paint and protect the paint. That's not Miami, though. Miami's going to ball pressure you. They're going to dig down from one pass away. They're going to jump passing lanes, or they're going to play ball denial. And a lot of these things are the things that Boston is wonderful at defensively. And so there was that stretch, Mike. It was just a deluge, like a 22-2 run where Boston wasn't even getting a shot up, and that ball handling will be distributed a little bit more when Smart and or Horford are back, but they still don't have like one guy where that's why they're in the league. That's the main thing that they do. And I think that that plays into what Miami does well. So I think that that is, I think that that has more staying power than the, oh, we're just going to target Peyton Pritchard for 18 minutes a game.
I think it's a really good point. It really is. It's a, if you think about the Miami Heat against the Lakers 2 years ago or in the 2020 finals, that Lakers team didn't have that type of weakness where Miami could prey in it. Now, maybe a little bit, right? They did win 2 games. And even though the Lakers were a better team, like they did take it to 6, but ultimately that Lakers team was more versatile than this Boston team. And they had a few more options and they had more in the form of AD, they had more size that could really punish and restrict not just Butler, but Bam. And Boston has that when Williams is in the game to an extent, but Williams isn't hurting you in the same way in the other end. He's hurting you with lobs and he was all over the rim early. But again, he's just a different player from Anthony Davis. And then, of course, the ultimate equalizer there is LeBron. That's, I think, where Tatum is going, not to get to actual LeBron level, but in terms of being like a top five player. But there is still that weakness where you could pressure him and Butler could be all over him and he is going to turn the ball over that much. LeBron's turnovers are usually more like, you know, trying to pass a guy to the rim and the other guy isn't seeing it quite at the same level of brilliance as he, or a little careless sometimes, right? But it's not like you don't force LeBron into making 7 turnovers too often, right?
Well, because LeBron is a passer. That's always been a part of his identity. Very rarely does like players improve at both their strengths and their weaknesses, but what they fundamentally are when they enter the league is pretty much what they're going to be for the rest of their career. And so Tatum has developed that. He's gotten better as a decision maker. He's gotten better as a ball handler. This is true of Jaylen Brown as well. But one of the things is they have kind of overlapping weaknesses, where Brown was having a hard time with the ball pressure, with the, and so it's like on a lot of teams, the Lakers, for example, that title team with LeBron and AD, if they really zeroed in on doing something that was meant to limit LeBron, saying put two on the ball, AD offers something different than what LeBron does, just the nature of how he plays. And whereas with, if you're able to ball pressure and ball deny against Boston, you can make life more difficult on both Tatum and Brown at the same time. Now, guys like Horford and Smart will be pressure releases, and we'll see. That's the place where it's like, it might not matter. They might have enough collective ball handling. But what do you think? Do you need, Mike, like, what do you need from your main guy that has the ball in his hands in this level of series in terms of the ball handling, the decisions he has to make, just like the orchestrating of the whole show?
Well, that is the point, though. I think that Boston needs the full deck, and their full deck is eight guys. You know, it's not 10. And that makes a difference.
Yeah.
And so if you're, so it's back to that original point that I don't want to repeat, but I don't think that they can overcome what Miami brings defensively. And I don't think they can be as good defensively in order to get those types of stops and or turnovers. It, like, Jimmy Butler has no business, you know, getting to the free throw line 18 times.
He has that grifter part that you don't like, Mike, yeah. while also having the skills. But he knows how to do it, man. It's part of why he's good in the playoffs.
Let me make sure I'm making a distinction here, because I have no problem with the way that Jimmy Butler gets to the free throw line.
Okay.
He does it a little bit more genuinely like LeBron or like Kobe, where like, I'm big, I'm strong, I'm hurtling my body into you, I'm forcing contact, but I'm not grabbing your left arm while I go up and then kicking my foot out. And so that, to me, there is a difference there. And so what I'm saying is that against a defense that is whole in this, which is a great defense in Boston, the best defense in the league this year, they're going to be better organized and better able to sustain those attacks than they were when they had a couple of weaker players in. And by the way, like, their weaker players aren't bad defenders. So this is still, even like Pritchard competes, he's small, but he's not awful. Tice, you already mentioned Nesmith. So this is still a team that's good, but I just thought that they were out of sync then, because the units that have been so good for Boston have been pretty consistent, other than the one game that Smart missed against Milwaukee. So it's less fun though to look at a series and just think it all depends on, okay, well, if this guy gets back or if he doesn't. You'd rather have the basketball, the actual X's and O's be the things, the adjustments game to game, you know, as opposed to just like a guy being out is such a massive adjustment.
That's certainly the case. And unfortunately, we've been kind of struck by a lot of injuries the last few years of the playoffs. The one thing I'd say, though, about this series is that it cuts both ways. Like, in the 6 minutes and 40 seconds that Jimmy Butler wasn't on the floor, Miami got outscored by 14 points in a game that they already won by 11, right?
He played 41 minutes and he was a plus 25. Yeah.
Right. And so part of the reason why they get their butts kicked in those non-Jimmy minutes is because Lowry is out. Right. And even if he individually is not some remarkable player, he's an organizer. He's going to help you get a good shot, run a good play. He's going to rotate on defense and be the responsible adult. Right. And so that does cut both ways. And he's supposedly closer to coming back. I'd like him to come off of the bench when he does. But yeah, but that said, this is where we are in this series.
Yeah. So I just, Gabe Vincent, though, I thought was great.
Yep.
And so he's been enough of a different, you know, different type of player in some ways than Lowry, but he's been enough of an approximation where that plug in is sort of fine. And because Lowry hasn't been himself for a while, you know, he just hasn't really been healthy, and his second half of the year wasn't as good as his first half, and he's older. So I don't see Lowry as being the reason that Miami was the one seed as much as sort of their collective and what he brought to that. So what I thought was the last point I'll make about Miami, Tyler Hero, he's also able to find the game that was lacking some for him in the previous series, because when he was like, and that's, I think, also because with Horford out and with Smart out, there were a couple of guys that he could deal with. And I think you can cut him off some if they have their full health. and make it more difficult. Like he scored, 37 2 years ago against Boston. Most of that was by getting Kemba Walker out on switches. So I mentioned earlier that Jimmy Butler was getting, and I think I misspoke. It was Butler got a little bit with Pritchard, but really it was Hero who was able to do some work against Pritchard. And that goes away if it's Marcus Smart. Or it goes away is too strong. He can still hit some tough shots, but it's harder for him. So that's that remains to be seen if he can keep that up.
It does. And that's part of it's funny because Miami, I was talking about the collective ball handling of Boston. When Jimmy's that's the thing, though, is they've still got Jimmy to go to. But outside of Jimmy, their shot making and who's our scorer on the floor right now is kind of a shared responsibility that anyone from a Gabe Vincent can. Oh, Gabe Vincent's having a good night tonight, or Max Strus, or, you know, even a guy like Oladipo has had a few double digit games in these playoffs. The thing about Lowry, though, is that like he's the one organizer. Like you don't give the ball like, hey, Gabe Vincent, run our sets against Boston's ball pressure and in this type of caliber of series. So it's one of those things that, as you know, Mike, it's a basketball attribute that I value, is the ability to handle the ball, and Miami's ability to swarm and their ability to share the ball handling and shot making on the other end is something that as a collective, I'm just really impressed by them. Let's switch gears in the last segment and talk about the upcoming Western Conference Finals. All right, Mike, we've got a bit of an unexpected conference finals. Got the 3 seed in Golden State, which I don't think people were surprised about. But Dallas is here as well, and Dallas is surging. When you look at this series, what stands out to you?
Well, Dallas was always the team that couldn't be dismissed because of how great Luka is and because they have Jason Kidd has come in and convinced everybody else to just play their ass off on defense, to slow down, to take the shots that come to them, but not those that don't. You know, they just play a smart, contained team game, and it works. And they're tough to score on. And Luka is so good in the half court that they're just never sped up. You know, they're perfectly content to win 80-76 if they have to, but they can go off and score and hit a ton of threes in a different sense. So they haven't really needed much from their bigs. Like, you know, Dwight Powell, who starts and just doesn't really like he'll set some screens and occasionally get a dunk. But Maxi Kleber is another kind of good player, but they don't need him on every given night to do too much. So they're just fitting into what the plan has been. And it revolves so much around Luka. And usually what happens is that you run into a team that's got sort of one more higher level star. And then that throws off the balance of what that team can do. And with Golden State to get to this specific matchup, they just have not been inspiring, right, in the way that they were early in the season. And we talked about it a little bit, Pete. I think that Steph not being full nuclear Thor type god, Steph is just that's part of it. Draymond being a little bit lessened offensively is part of it. Klay trying to fight his way back to full Klay while Jordan Poole is there on the bench. It hasn't been as cohesive, you know, and so that showed up, I think, in their first two playoff series where, you know, they won, like they beat Denver pretty easily, but Denver was really bad for a playoff team other than Jokic, who was historic. They just, the personnel with all of their injuries, you know, was just not there. So that was hard to take that seriously. And then Memphis, who's a really good team, but didn't have Ja. And then even after Ja goes out, it was as good as that team was, Pete, it's still, you just expected Golden State to be a little bit more fluid. So sometimes it's hard to look at a playoff series and not almost overvalue the previous matchups. And the worst example for this was 2008 when the Lakers just sailed through the Western Conference and Boston got taken to 7 seemingly every game. And you probably at that time, I was still covering the Timberwolves. If I can get your quick take on that to transition into that, because I just think that's an interesting overall playoff topic, and then we can get back to the specifics of this matchup.
Yeah, no, that was absolutely the case. We had a great series against the Spurs where we beat them in 5, and I think that they were the 1 seed that year. That said, I didn't expect to beat the Celtics in that, and I know this is probably an unpopular Lakers take, and trust me, I wish I didn't have it, but I don't think we win that series even with Bynum and Ariza. But yeah, those the way that's what's fun about the playoffs, though, Mike, is like that the way you match up with that team across from you. Like Steph Curry poses a different problem for Dallas than any other player that they've played against. Luka poses a different problem for Golden State than any other player that they've played against. And even beyond the top line guys like Jordan Poole on both ends of the floor, like he's a different type of player than Dallas has had to defend as well. But he's also very targetable by Dallas. And that's ultimately when in bringing it back to this series that I may have a blind spot for Golden State. Maybe they'll win this series. But I see a guy in Luka that is going to pick, that has several different guys to choose from that he can score on, that range from a Jordan Poole, Steph Curry, to the big guy, to a big guy like Looney. And he's not the only guy that they have that can create. Like, I thought Dallas did a great job, Mike, of addressing the reasons why they lost in previous playoffs. When you watched those series, they lost because they could not score when Luka was not on the floor. Like, they completely fell off a cliff whenever Luka wasn't on the court. And so now you got a Dinwiddie and Brunson that just, they provide something. You know what I mean? It's not, and obviously they had Brunson last year, but they've got more of that with the addition of Dinwiddie and as well. And so, they address that, and then just defensively, they're so much better, and they're better in a way, Mike, that I think is challenging for Golden State, because Golden State is so good at carving you up on the perimeter, but Dallas has a bunch of really agile guys who are going to make their rotations. They trap a ton, which I think Steph, as he gets older, is going to continue to have more problems with. But that said, every argument that pops up into my mind when I think, how's this going to go, is anti-Golden State. And I haven't thought that highly of them in the first place. Before your enthusiasm waned for them, can you make some pro-Golden State arguments for me in this series?
Yeah, because going into the playoffs, you know, and in really, I think especially early in the playoffs when Phoenix looked to be not just the Booker hamstring injury, but Phoenix just wasn't looking quite the same in that New Orleans series. And Meanwhile, Golden State was pretty easily handling Denver. And they weren't playing that great, but still, they were winning the games. And that was, to me, it was like, okay, hold on. So maybe Golden State is the new favorite in the West. And this was when Luka also had yet to come back and show that he was going to be fully healthy with his calf strain. And that was the time period where, and I think the Las Vegas odds, quite frankly, reflected it too. I think that shifted. So then, but things start to shift as Luka comes back. They win those two home games. And now you think, all right, well, hold on. Now Dallas is in this mix. And then Golden State continues to struggle. And that's what I was talking about before. So now I'll get to your question about Golden State and sort of why they're still dangerous. And, you know, I think the first thing about them, they do have the nice big wing size. Now, the issue is, I push back against my own point, is that in trying to create these lineups to get Jordan Poole out there and to get Jordan Poole out there with Steph, all of a sudden, as much as Steph has improved as a defender, and I think everybody saw the clip where some reporter called him a two-way player and he celebrated it. You know, if it's Steph and Jordan Poole, all of a sudden you're not a great defense just by nature of having two guys out there. Mm-hmm. And then if Jordan Poole isn't out there, well, then you need Klay Thompson to be Klay Thompson of a couple of years ago. And in the regular season, Pete, this wasn't as much of a point of concern. And I think that's where some of the confidence that Golden State had. But it's when you get down into these series and you start to think about targeting players and you start to think about what made Golden State really great in the past is that Steph was almost always the only guy out there, you know, that you were looking at defensively, because it was Iguodala, you know, playing those big minutes. It was Klay, who at the time a top defender. It was Draymond. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the other guy could have been Livingston, obviously, when Kevin Durant, that's just a whole nother story, right? Sure. That's just a complete wrap. It was Harrison Barnes in that early run. Yeah. So they never got into that model that I don't like, which is the two smaller guards, which is the Dame and CJ, you know, or the Mitchell and Conley, or the thing that doesn't work in the postseason, the Chris Paul when he's been paired with somebody else, like Jamal Crawford, or whoever it was early. So that part of me was that's the part that I think we didn't see as much in the regular season. And now that we're seeing it more in the playoffs, that they can't just play. Like, if they sit Poole and it's Curry, you know, Otto Porter, Andrew Wiggins, Draymond Green, and Kevon Looney, then I'm pretty interested in that. And then Poole as more of kind of the classic sixth man.
Okay.
But they seem to want to have it be more like Poole getting 30-plus minutes. you know, and then they're not the same defensively, but they're a little bit more dynamic offensively. So if Porter, let me, to wrap up my long point, if you can get more of those minutes from Porter, you can get something from Kuminga. You're going to be like Looney. You're actually playing more, and Dallas can't complete, like Luka can't completely destroy Looney, and he's at least sort of staying somewhat solid. But then that's where I hit my, some of my optimism about Golden and why I'm picking Dallas to win the series, right? That's where that comes in. And it's not that Golden State can't do that. I just don't, I don't have that for sure lineup that I know I can trust in the same way. You know, with what my concern is about that kind of Wiggins, Clay, Otto Porter trio, as opposed to some of the big wings that they've had around Steph in the past. And that's how I think I would sum it up.
I think that's spot on. And I think that one of the ways that manifests is when you've got small guards and a not terribly mobile big, that pretty much dictates that you're going to be in a drop coverage. And so a guy like Looney, you're not going to switch a guy like Looney onto Luka all of that often. But that said, when like Luka's a drop killer, like it's very difficult to run drop coverages against Dallas.
You also can't really trap him.
Right. And so this is when you talk, and then, so, okay, well, why don't we switch? Well, they've got several guys that you can hunt. They've got the small guards. As much as Steph is always, I think, really been an underrated defender, like, what, is Steph going to guard Luka one-on-one? Of course not. Is Jordan Poole going to do that? Of course not. And so, okay, switching doesn't come, you know, work that well. Then trapping, well, now you've got 4-on-3s everywhere. You got 4 smart players between Dorian Finney-Smith and Maxi Kleber and all the guys that Brunson and all them dudes that Dallas has. Somebody, a very good tall shooter, is going to get a pretty good open shot from 3 if you trap Luka. And so there's a certain amount. Now, this isn't going to manifest itself every single possession, and Golden State will certainly get some defensive wins. But when I flip that on the other end, Mike, there's not anybody on Golden State where I'm like, that guy can get the shot that they want to get whenever they want to get it. And I don't say that to diminish Steph, but he's someone that, especially with the way that Kidd likes to trap and put 2 on the ball, it, like there's not that, well, what do you do against Golden State thing on the other end of it? That, but again, I've made so many arguments like kind of against Golden State here that I feel like I have a blind spot. There's something that I'm not seeing in Golden State that I'm curious what it might be.
Well, Steph taking his game back up, you know, to a certain other level and being as fearsome in certain ways as Luka has. But that's the thing that we haven't seen yet in this postseason. And it's hard to think that they can conjure that up. But, you know.
Well, it's also, Mike, like Steph isn't as much the kind of guy where it's like, Steph, let's just give you the ball.
Yeah, make they don't it just run. They don't just have him run a million screen rolls throughout the game. But
yeah,
one of the reasons that I wish Darius, I'd like to get his opinion on this in terms of scheme. Yeah. And you were talking about it a little bit. I think what I would do is just switch and say, fine, if you want to hunt, you know, whether it's Jordan Poole or whatever, and just let Luka, like that's what you're going to have to do, though. You're going to have to get 40 every game. We're not going to trap. We're not going to leave shooters wide open. In the corners, except for the guy, maybe the occasional guy that we want to shoot. And I get it that that's not necessarily a recipe for success to let Luka do that, but just hope that he wears down some over the course of his series. And that might be what I would do.
I think that being a perfectly reasonable point of view, like let Luka kill you, like kind of speaks to some of the dilemmas that Golden State has on the defensive
end.
Like
even that's how we used to have to talk. Sure. You used to talk about LeBron in the playoff series. You know, just it, now the difference being that LeBron early in his career wasn't going to hit you over the top as much as Luka can.
Yeah,
but LeBron also was a little bit more forceful, even than Luka, right? In certainly in transition and in finishing at the rim. But yeah, that's Dallas is just here. You back to your point. Yeah.
I think what I would do, I think the best of not great options is the trap and rotate. Like I'm more under the idea, like I'm not going to let Luka get whatever he wants. And I know these guys are good shooters, but if a Kleba or a DFS or Bertans, like if they can get knockdown threes with my guys closing out to them, like, I don't know, I'd rather lose that way than like letting Luka get his. Cause I like, to me, if you're like, oh, Luka, you're going to have to get 40. Luka's going to be like, great. You give me single coverage against Steph and Jordan Poole, I will be happy to give you 40.
Yeah. I'm just thinking that over the course of a series, if they have to beat Golden State four times, and you're still doing what Phoenix did to some success early in that series and then wasn't able to do as much, but where you're mm-hmm. making Luka be more involved defensively. And
ooh, good call.
You know, yeah, and so you're basically, this is the same thing that I think teams have done to James Harden in the past, although he's not to the level of Luka and LeBron. He was beating teams by himself offensively, you know, including in playoff games. And that's more what I'm saying, is that try to not just let Luka like attack Jordan Poole and Steph Curry, because guess what? You're not going to have, I wouldn't play those two guys together as much in yeah. this series. And so if he wants to just keep trying, like make it harder, and this is where Draymond and his intelligence can come in. And this is where even Clay defensively mm-hmm. and where, okay, it seems like we're going to let you just, we're going to switch this. But then once in a while, when you do it, if you keep doing it to Steph, then you're going to see somebody else and we're going to bake this rotation in. And sure. And again, this is above my pay grade as to how to figure that out defensively. But I'm trying to wear Luka down, I guess, is my point, other than just let him play and let him involve Finney Smith a certain night with a bunch of open threes. And then he's involving gotcha. Brunson a certain amount. And then Dinwiddie, like where he's sort of orchestrating the whole thing. I'm going to try to force Luka to wear down as the series goes on. But since I have to talk myself into it, that's why I'm picking Dallas.
Sure, sure. No, and I think that's a brilliant point that we were talking about, you know, that topic of endurance and fitness that we were talking about recently, where if you're asking Luka to be the on-ball scorer every time, kind of like Giannis was, that's the closest thing so far in these playoffs where it's like, you just give the ball to that dude every time. If you're asking him to do that, and you're targeting him on defense every single play or close to it, you may not see the benefits of that right away, but there is a progressive benefit to that that I think is one of the stronger attack arguments for Golden State versus Dallas. And after all of it,
go ahead.
No. And after all of this and all of the, oh, what's Golden State going to do? They're probably going to win tonight, right? Because that's how the basketball gods work.
Well,
but
I don't think the basketball gods work based on if you and I say something, then they're going to reward the other team.
That's a good point. So no. Yeah, we're not the main characters, yeah. are we, Mike?
But I do think that this also sounds, it's kind of like a half-baked idea, but if I can put Steph and Poole, especially, on Brunson and Dinwiddie and just encourage those guys, you know, so like, hey, look at this mismatch that Brunson has, and then just sort of hope that Luka then, you know, is doing less. Maybe I try to do that also, but yeah, I don't know, man.
Yeah, I think Brunson, I don't know, I think Brunson eats against small guards like that. Yeah, he does. Picking on Chris Paul.
Do I want that more than I want Luka eating? I don't know. That goes against counter to my previous theory, but these are all things we're workshopping.
It's fun. That's part of the fun of this. It's not necessarily to arrive at the right answer. It's the discussion in between where I think we learn a lot. So this was fun. Got another game one tonight. We'll be back tomorrow with the full crew. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
James has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. And the Lakers win the game.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two. One.
Miss it.
Unbelievable.
For the victory.
It's over.
And
shot clock now to five.
Bryant.
Yes. And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.